The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 713. It's the 17th of February 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments, that's ENGI ticker, covers yesterday's trading update and discusses their focus as far as future investments are concerned. Plus, Charles Tatnall, chairman of Plutus Power Gen, PPG, covers progress at the company and gives three reasons why you should add them to your watch list. Plus, Alan Minty, executive chairman of New Oil and Gas, that's NUOG ticker, on the two pieces of significant news they've just released. Also, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top three most liked RNSs on Vox this morning. Do you know what's becoming a trend? There's less RNSs out on every Friday. Last couple of weeks we've had, I think companies, brokers must be winding down for a nice long weekend.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments. That's ENGI ticker. Dominic, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, now you're a newish company. You were on a few weeks back and you're looking at doing things there and getting a bit proactive in your investments. But for people not aware of you or didn't hear that podcast, could you remind us, Dominic, exactly what Energizer is all about, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So Energizer is an AIM investment company, and our main strategic focus is investing in operating companies that have an underlying property portfolio. For example, a service department business where the operator operates the service departments, but underlying that there is a real estate portfolio. So in these types of business, we end up owning and or being the tenant and the owner or controlling the underlying real estate portfolio.
I understand. Okay. And by the way, Dominic, last time he came on, a couple of people, I think, who are keen investors in the company said Dominic didn't blow his own trumpet enough. He talked about the two other guys mentioned in the company, but you didn't go through your history and your track record. So could you tell us what you've done in the past, Dominic? And, because I always say when investing, always look at the head honchos, the people in charge there, what's their track record? So tell us a bit about yourself, please, if you could, Dominic.
Yeah, that's not a problem, not at all. Obviously, there's Nish and Stephen, Reen Landholm, there's myself as well. So my background is 25 years in property investing, in investment management and in private equity real estate companies. And that's been both in the UK and in Europe. And I've been involved in various businesses like Henderson Global Investors, you might have heard about. Mm-hmm. Security Capital European Realty, which is a private equity group. And in each of those situations, and indeed in the situation that I'm in now with Energizer, I've always been involved in building things which are small or frankly nothing, and building them up to big things. So I was in Southern Europe and we started with nothing. We ended up with a couple of billion euro investment business, real estate portfolio. And I've been in other situations that have done similar things. So we start with not very much and we build very large, multiple hundreds of millions or billion euro plus or pound plus real estate investment portfolios. So now here I'm an Energizer, it's extremely exciting for me because I really, really enjoy the excitement of building from something which is very small. And obviously I like the alignment, so I get myself aligned with all the other shareholders financially and emotionally as well. And then work hard alongside the rest of the team to build the company up sustainably, but quickly to something which is successful for everybody.
Yes, and just to the other guys there, of course, Stephen Wicks is the chairman and he's a CEO of Inland Homes, which is like a 100 million market cap company built up, of course. And Nick Mould, is that how you say Nish Mould? Yeah, so he's there to Inland Homes as well. So you guys are very experienced in this sector, and so it's obviously quite exciting for you, like you say. As far as, you know, property operating companies are concerned, talk us through the trading update because you've released a bit of news there. Talk us through it, if you could, please, Dominic.
Yeah, so why do we invest in operating companies? Very, very quickly, it's because we see we can grow the value of the tenants as well as the underlying portfolio. So as I said, we're an operating company. You own the tenants, so we can grow the value of that by increasing the revenue, by increasing the valuation multipliers, mm-hmm. and we can also work on the underlying portfolio to increase the value of that at the same time. So there are multiple levels of value we can add. Regarding the trading update. You're exactly right. We just issued a trading update. There are two main areas in that. There's the existing portfolio and there's new potential investments. In terms of the existing portfolio, as the listeners may know, we invested in Kingswood, Surrey. Energizer lent down to a development company that's built 12 residential units in Kingswood, Surrey. And we're pleased to say that the last remaining units has now been reserved for sale at the asking price. So that will close that investment successfully and the money and profits will come back to Energizer. So that's a great result. And secondly, in Wellingborough, Northampton, that's the second part of the existing portfolio of Energizer. In Wellingborough, we own 20 residential units. And the business plan has been to improve the occupancy, which has happened. It's now more than 90% occupancy, and also to increase rental value and overall value. And all of that has now been done. So we've looked at that and said we think it's probably at the point where it's maximized its value, and we're now considering marketing that to return capital to Energizer so that we can invest in other opportunities. So the second part is potential new investments, and within the restrictions and limits of what I can really say about this, what I would say is we've looked at a number of investments since December, quite a lot actually, and we've really narrowed our focus down to service apartments. You'll have seen some of the squawks I've done on Vox that I've been talking a little bit about the service apartment sector, which we like a lot. We've now identified three potential specific opportunities which we're really interested in, and we will expect to start due diligence, our own due diligence process on them quite shortly in the near future.
Okay, and you've got a general meeting coming up and to raise the headroom to raise more capital. So why do you need to do this? Well, to explain this, please, if you could, Dominic.
Yeah, no problem. So we have, in December, we raised £1.255 million successfully, which is great. And what that did is it used up the capacity or the approval, the authority of the directors to issue money. We have to go to shareholders to allow to get authority to issue money. So we used up all the approval that came to us from the last AGM. And so we're going back to shareholders to say, look, we successfully raised. We've got some great opportunities in the pipeline. We're really excited about what's coming up. And so that we can act quickly when we're ready to make an investment or we're ready to capitalise on the price of the company in the markets, we want to increase our headroom to allow us to give us authority to raise more capital, to issue new shares. So it's a really success. It's a really positive thing we're coming to the markets with.
So, yeah, essentially, so like you just said then, you can be ready for deals there to be done. You don't have to, you know, delay it and it may not go stale or sour or someone else may not jump in. You're there ready with the money, is that right?
Yeah, we're there ready with the money or with the ability to raise money or with the ability to use the shares of the company at the right price to trade for the investment. So we can also issue shares as part of the compensation, as part of the purchase price. So it allows us to be ready to do what we want to do and what we need to do to close investments.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so you mentioned service departments. Why do you like that sector, Dominic?
There's three areas really we like particularly, Justin. One, on the demand side, on the customers using the department side, we're really fascinated and interested in the fact that Airbnb, who we all know has had such a huge success in recent years, and they've really moved consumers out of hotels in many situations and into using apartments. So they've really opened the eyes of consumers and leisure users of service apartments to using that type of lodging. So now leisure users and business users, so corporate users, want to use apartments. So there's a growing demand. Mm-hmm. Secondly, London is a great city for this stuff. London is the biggest market in service departments in Europe, but London versus the rest of the world, London, even though it's an international global city, but compared to New York, Singapore, Hong Kong, is actually a small market in service departments. So there's relatively a lot to come in the sector. Secondly, in terms of operations, we see there's a lot of operational upside that you can get through using technology. And as we mentioned last time, we really like applying technology to real estate so we can monitor managing a great service to customers by using more and more technology and scale the businesses very efficiently. And lastly, we like in a service apartments, we like them because on investment points, we are ahead of the market, we believe. So private equity firms are investing already in this area, but the large institutions are not quite investing in there yet. So we're a little bit ahead of them, which is good news, because as these large institutions start, they're dipping their toe, but as they start investing more into this area, we believe that multipliers will improve, and that means values will go up. So really, really strong pointers for great performance coming in the future from this sector in terms of demand from customers and in terms of pricing, because more and more money will flow into this sector.
Yeah, and thanks for putting that. You put a little report as well on Vox, a PDF there attached to that, and you people can see that if they just search for ENGI on Vox, you can see that. And I had a quick read through that, and I thought, yeah, very interesting stats there. How London is lagging behind, the rest there. So thanks for that. Okay, Donick, well, this is quite exciting. I mean, as far as ambition for the company, I mean, do you have lofty ambitions here for the company? I mean, are you driven to sort of achieve on par with what you achieved in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we want to grow this business rapidly, as I was saying. We're a small business at the moment. We're right at the beginning of the journey, which is a reason for, why I'm interested and why I'm invested. And it's an interesting thing for the listeners, I think, to understand that we're right at the beginning of the journey. And things that we do make a big impact on the company. So investments that we're looking at, and any investment we make, has a big impact on the company because it's such a small company right now. So yes, I absolutely, look at what Nish and Stephen have done at Inland Homes. They've had a success going from 30 million to 125 million market cap. Look at the different things I've done historically, growing businesses from very small to hundreds of millions, or in one or two cases, billions of euros. So absolutely, the ambition is to make this a significant business, growing fast, but not too fast, because overtrading is a bad thing. You need to grow sustainably, but to do that quickly and successfully together with the team and the team that we'll build.
Excellent. Well, Dominic, you know how Vox works. You've made quite a few posts on energy timeline there. So what happens is people will hit the follow button, and if they do that, then whenever you release an RNS, they'll get an RNS notification sent straight to the front screen of their phone. So for people not following Energizer Investments now, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So we're a great team. I've mentioned Nish and Stephen a few times. I mentioned myself at the start. I think we have got a strong track record in this area. This is what we do, and what we've done for a number of years. We're good at raising capital, and all businesses need to raise money to grow in these types of sectors. So we're good at doing that. And in particular, we're good at growing listed businesses. And we're totally aligned with the shareholders. As I said, we're all invested in this company. We've all put our own money into this company. We've got a good strategy. I think the operational real estate part of property is a very interesting place to play in the markets, because you can build scale without having to use an enormous amount of capital. As I think I mentioned previously, you can either own the underlying assets or own and rent some of the underlying assets. You can build your portfolio and scale your businesses quickly without needing enormous amounts of capital. We're recently funded, so we've raised money recently in December successfully, and we will continue to be able to, I believe, because of all of the things I've just said, raise money successfully at sensible prices. And it's the start of the journey. We're starting our acquisition program. We're focused now on three opportunities, which hopefully one of them will deliver in the not too distant future. And we hope people come and join us on this journey.
Excellent. Well, like you say, you narrowed your focus down on three potential investments, so it looks like you're quite close. It'd be nice to chat to you again, Dominic, very soon off the back of one of those deals, hopefully. So thanks very much for coming on, and speak again soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Tatnall, Chairman of Plutus Power Gen. That's PPG ticker. Charles, thank you for joining me.
Hello, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Do you know what? I do like the name, Plutus Power Gen. It sounds like some kind of superhero, do you think?
Yes, although looking at my management team, I can't see any of them in capes.
Yeah, but it's almost stand back, Plutus Power Gen is here. I do like that. Charles, what I'd like to do now, for people not aware of what you do there at Plutus Power Gen, can you give us a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're in the flexible power generation business. And we do that by building standalone 20 megawatt sites around the country, and we fund those, whilst being capital intensive, we fund those through third party giving us debt and taking percentage interest in SPVs we set up for each site. So whilst an unusually capital intensive business model for a small AIM company, we managed to do this without diluting our shareholder base.
Yeah.
We supply energy to grid and the big six energy companies. And thus, you know, our revenue streams are very, very solid and with fabulous counterparties.
Okay, so essentially, how many sites do you have at the moment, Charles, operational?
We have funding for 9 sites in place already. Mm-hmm. The first one has been built already and is operating. It's been very busy over the winter months. And we're building out a significant number of sites during the course of this year. And we are now broadening our product offering in terms of not just using diesel power generation, but we're now moving towards gas powered sites as well, which instead of just providing standby power, will be what's called a merchant supplier, and that will be providing power on an ongoing basis. So we're moving up the food chain in the energy mix, and we have very lofty, or maybe not lofty, but we have strong ambitions to move further up with regards to energy generation.
Okay, let's take a step back. So to explain this for people not aware, so you have this a standalone site, the one's operational at the moment, you've got 8 others in planning, ready to go sort of thing. But so what happens is, because we've always heard in the media that we're very close sometimes to, electricity blackouts because mm-hmm. the power stations aren't enough mm-hmm. capacity there. So then they call upon you, do they, to supply electricity to the grid?
That's one of our revenue streams, that's correct.
Yep.
That's called standby operating reserve, and you are right, there is an energy crisis. I don't know whether that's too strong a word, but we have certainly are challenged with regards to the energy supply in this country, and that's a result of several reasons. Mm-hmm. The key ones being the decommissioning of nuclear power, the move away from carbon power generation, and possibly an over-reliance on wind and solar. And obviously, it's not always windy and not always sunny in this country. So on account of that, the need for being able to provide standby energy is quite apparent, and we have the ability to turn on our energy production within 2 minutes remotely, and so we can help assist the company the country if there's an energy supply problem. The other revenue streams are triad, where we supply energy to the big six energy companies during moments of peak demand in the winter to help defray the need of them to rely on the infrastructure that National Grid provides. And then the third set source of income is something which is called the capacity mechanism, that which is technically a government way of support, albeit paid through National Grid, to promote the build out of further energy generation in the country, because as we know, there's no nuclear power stations being committed to yet, as far as I'm aware. There's talk of one, but I don't think it's been completely signed off yet. But there is a bit of a shortfall in terms of the amount of energy production which is going to be coming into the supply network.
Yeah, and you said that there you're going from diesel powered to gas powered. Apart from the environmentally, it's cleaner, obviously. What's the benefits to you, apart from that?
Well, I think just bear in mind, though, with the diesel sites, we're only on for 150 hours a year anyways. So whether it's an environmental issue or not, I think is a rather lazy observation, to be honest, because it can easily be argued. But in fact, it's actually very, very positive from an environmental perspective. Mm-hmm. But no, we do like the idea of gas for a variety of reasons, but the key one being that it will allow us to be a merchant supplier, and that is something which is very, very attractive to us, and we think that we can fund that differently from our first sites, because we've become a lot more experienced and knowledgeable and aware of the different funding sources. And so these gas sites, we believe, will be funded, allowing us to retain an 80% interest. And such are our business models for our sites, that already we've had a letter of commitment from one of the big six energy companies to provide funding for the 20% equity needed for the build-out of our site. So it's a clear validation of our business plan and business model moving forward.
Yeah, and so time frame wise, you said you've got one up and running now. So over what mm-hmm. period will you get the other units up and running?
We have at least 5 or 6 which will be built this year. It's possible it could be more, but as each year passes, we believe it will be building more and more, and we're getting better at it. And what's nice is that the unknown unknowns are getting smaller and smaller in number, which have caused us delays in the past. So again, it's just one of those things we get better at, you know, whether it's, you know, the build out or whether it's the funding. Each year it gets better and better for us. And if we can combine that with increasing our percentage interest in the sites, and we can combine that with not having to issue, you know, equity in the top co, the value, you know, to our shareholders accruing just increases more and more. And yeah, at a more rapid rate as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you're obviously heading in the right direction because you announced a maiden profit before tax this year. It's a small one, but obviously it's a maiden profit. So you're obviously heading in the right direction.
Well, I think so. It was very modest. But the thing is, it does just go to show, you know, the path we're on. And the nice thing is that myself and my three co-directors, you know, we've all invested substantially ourselves in the company. We're all, you know, substantial shareholders in the company. So it's comforting for us to know that, you know, we were right in doing that, and we still feel, you know, that we are right, and in fact even more stronger than we have done in the past. We are very, very ambitious with the future of the company, and that ambition grows on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. We're very excited about the future.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I speak to a lot of AIM companies, and they dream of profit. So, you know, you've achieved that dream there, so that was a good thing. And so, I mean, like you said, you can see, you know, potential here for growth. Can you with Plutus PowerGen?
Well, I think there's going to be, you know, immense growth. It's a question of, you know, to what extent and how fast. But we can be sure that there will be growth, and we have every confidence of that. So we have, you know, as I said beforehand, you know, we generally do have lots to look forward to. The only unknowns are, you know, how fast do we grow, and yeah, and to what extent do we grow with regards to share price wise. But we feel it's, you know, we're going in one direction. But there are a couple of, you know, pleasant unknowns out there, and which could have a material impact on our short-term profitability. For example, you know, we feel that, you know, the diesel sites make $1.25 million EBITDA a year, and perhaps if maybe we might elect to sell a couple of those sites, you know, in a much, much shorter time frame. So I think you could conservatively say that must be worth at least 10, 12 times EBITDA. So after paying down the debt, that would be an immediate windfall of just one or two sites of £5 or £10 million, you know, to go onto the bottom line. And bearing in mind we're more than break even now, that would have quite a dynamic impact on the share price. But whether we elect to do that or not, that remains to be seen. But there are lots of interesting aspects which could really accelerate the share price. But when they happen, or will they happen, and remains to be seen, but nevertheless, it is one direction this is going, and we are very confident about that.
Excellent. Well, Charles, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies, and people do this by hitting the follow button on your page, and it adds them to their watch list. So, could you give someone now who's not following you three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, firstly, my colleagues. I really think we've got a cracking management team. They're incentivized. You know, they put their own money in. They were doing a good job, but as I've seen them, you know, really come from a back of an envelope project idea to start off with to actually generating energy within 2.5 years, I think they're absolutely outstanding on the operations side. So they're incentivized and very, very ambitious. And then they've got a great pipeline which is fully funded. They've got a lot to do, and they're doing it well, and they're getting better and better at it. And then the manner in which we've been funding our projects is positive for shareholders of the company. And what's more, we're even improving on that as well, because initially we were only able to retain a 45% interest in our sites, and now we feel we can retain an 80% interest in our sites. And I think that's been our business model has been validated by one of the big six energy companies who are wanting to co-invest with us on our sites. So I think the market is very interesting. There's lots of opportunity available to us. We have the team to do it, and we have the funding to do it. And I think the counterparties of our revenue streams are very, very solid and strong. So I'm hard-pressed to think of any negatives about the business. And I think the only issues which are outstanding or unknown is just a question of how fast we are in executing our business plan and how big our profits are going to be in the medium and long term.
Marvellous, Charles. Very good to talk to you. And like you said, you've got a very exciting, you know, news jam-packed 2017. So hopefully we'll talk again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Minty, Executive Chairman of New Oil and Gas. That's NUOG ticker. Alan, thanks for joining me again.
Pleasure, Justin. Nice to talk again.
Yeah, it's been a busy old time for the company. We didn't speak that long ago, but since we've last spoken, you've had two bits of significant news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do that, Alan, as always, for new listeners or people who've not heard of NUOG, can you explain what the business is all about, please, Alan?
Yes, of course, yes. New Oil and Gas is an E&P company with assets in Western Newfoundland and a 50% stake in a company which focuses on the development of marginal fields. This latter activity is the focus of the sort of new strategy and one that we've been working to implement and develop for the last 2 or 3 years, and will remain the focus. And probably, as shareholders are aware, we've been extremely active over the last few months with many announcements based both on Western Newfoundland and on the Marshall Field projects.
Exactly. And as I always like to do, just to clarify for everyone, maybe people not too aware of what marginal fields are about, could you just summarise what marginal fields are and why you are focusing on them, please, Alan?
Yeah, of course. The marginal fields are discoveries, or the marginal fields we focus on are discoveries. Where the economics are can be improved upon, but are not currently economic. But the beauty of them is that the major risk, exploration risk, appraisal risk has been removed. So what we do is we reconfigure proven technology to find ways to make those fields economic and with internal rates of returns that are far higher than the traditional hurdle rates that exist in larger projects. As a consequence, we believe this enables us to attract investment and partners into developing the projects which would otherwise be lost.
Excellent stuff. Okay, let's get to the news. So on the 6th of February, you raised some funds. Can you tell us how much you raised and what it's going to be used for, please, if you could, Alan?
Yes. We raised just slightly over £2 million. And the focus of that is, of course, the Marshall Field projects, because we have already managed to reduce the costs almost to zero on the Western Newfoundland assets. And I'll explain a bit about that later. The funds will be applied to helping us acquire stakes in projects, of course, Marshall Field projects, which we have to evaluate first. And then, of course, we have to be able to invest in the equity position that we hope to achieve. And that is why we've raised the funds. So the funds are, although there would be a necessary, there would have been a related dilution, the funds in themselves are very important to increase value in the company going forward.
Excellent. So good to hear. It's always good to see that the company's raising funds and they have a plan, you know, and a strategy which they're enacting upon.
We do.
Exactly. So that was very interesting there where you say you've managed to get the cost down to almost zero. Can you explain that, please, Alan?
Yeah, of course. What we've got is Western Newfoundland is an awful long way from the UK, and it's quite a remote region of Newfoundland where we've had assets for ever since we went to IPO. We've come to two agreements. We have two licenses. One's called EL1070, which is an exploration license, and one is PL2002, which is a production license. We have agreed, we have made agreements with two companies, G2 Energy on EL1070 and PVF Energy on PL2002, whereby they will take over the management of those sites to the first one to apply for a significant discovery license, and the second one to work out ways to resume production. And of course, the intention of both those parties is to negotiate either royalty arrangements or farm-ins with us in the future. But the key element for us is that they are taking on the costs of that work.
Okay.
So that enables us to focus on the Marshall Fields.
Excellent. So the next bit of news you released was on the 13th February this month, and it was a completion of due diligence on EL1070 option agreement.
That's
Can you
correct.
Explain yeah. this, please, Alan?
Yes. What happens is, of course, the it's a large and complex license. G2 Energy, which is led by Dr. George Langdon and Gerard Edwards, two professional people we've known for a long time, have undertaken the due diligence in a license they know quite a bit about. And now they are starting to work to put the application together for a significant discovery license. This will take quite some time, but the license itself, if awarded, is extremely valuable because it is for a 25-year period, and I think it's the sort of last one of a sort of regulation that is being phased out. So it's very important for us to achieve that.
Yeah, okay. So you're at a market cap now of just over 5 million, and looking at the projects you have here, I mean, obviously it's difficult to say, and we're not going to be leading people in any way, but you know, what are the sort of potential here, Alan, of what you've got going on?
Well, of course, the potential will depend, the potential depends, A, on what our partners in Western Newfoundland produce, but B, the projects we acquire. I am very confident in the very near future that we'll be able to announce that we've acquired our first marginal field project, and from there, others will, let's say, arrive into our portfolio. I think the best way to think about this is possibly to look at the increase in share price over the last 4 months, which has been a sub factor of 6 or 8, mm-hmm. even after dilution. And I anticipate that that rate of increase, not maybe to the same quantum, will continue because we have lots and lots of news to come out. We have lots of work. And of course, it's not been brought to full completion, you will know that the money is being invested to undertake the work to achieve that.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, Alan, it's all happening there. You're looking busy. 2017 started off with a bang here. You've got, like I said, several releases out and you're working hard. So for anyone not following you on Vox, Alan, as you know, the Pack Drill here, could you give us 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yes, and I think we've probably covered them in our discussion so far. Firstly, I anticipate that the high frequency of news activity should encourage investors that they will understand what we're doing, and they should believe that that will generate increase. Secondly, we have a strong confidence that we can bring in the marginal field projects, which will be a step leap in creating the value. And third, I think the trend in the increase in share price will continue, and this should be attractive to investors coming in.
Alan, lovely to chat to you, as always, and hopefully, like you say, you've got a bit of a news-rich period coming up, so hopefully we'll be chatting soon again. Thanks very much.
Absolutely, Justin. Thank you indeed.
All right, top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours are at 5, URU Metals, that's URU ticker. At 4, it's there again, Ascent Resources, AST. At 3, Nkondezi Energy, NCCL. I think that's after Nicola on the podcast earlier yesterday said she quite liked the chart there, and she may start investing in smaller cap stocks. And she said that may be one she's looking at. She likes the chart a lot. At 2, Metal Tiger, MTR. We covered it with Nicola today on the podcast. And at number 1, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was Extract Resources, XTR. All right, here are the top 3 most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 3, Metal Tiger, MTR, Botswana Copper Silver Project, 75-metre zone of mineralisation intersected below T3. At 2, ATD Energy, ATD, of course, investor presentation. And number 1, the most liked RNS in the last 24 hours was CloudTag, conversion of £100,000 worth of loan notes. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.